Well, good morning and welcome to the Gathering Church. My name is John Mark Redwine. I'm the lead pastor, and we're honored to have you with us today as we conclude this series on storms. A year ago, at the start of this series, we were hit in our region by the worst storm that this area has ever seen. And so we've been talking about how we can learn from that as the people of God over these last couple of weeks. Today, we're going to talk about the aftermath of the storm. Last week, Pastor Brandon brought a message about getting through the chaos of the storm that if you missed it, really, I would recommend you to go back and check that out and listen to it. It was a powerful message, and I'm excited to conclude today as we talk about the aftermath. Before I do, I want to encourage you two things. One, Pastor Robert was just talking about At the Movies. I really believe that At the Movies is one of the greatest gospel opportunities you get all year long. We have a lot of fun with this series. There's popcorn and candy and fun stuff going on, but the gospel will be extremely clearly presented over these next couple weeks. And so for those people in your life that you've been praying for, that you've been witnessing to, speaking the gospel to, this is a great opportunity to bring them in to church, to have a fun Sunday, but also hear and receive the gospel clearly. I'm just going to tell you right now, I don't know if there's a clearer gospel message than Lilo and Stitch, okay? Just test me. Come on back in a couple weeks. I can't wait. And then right after that, we're going into a series called Season 5 of Binge the Bible. And if you've been around at the Gathering for a while, we've been in Binge the Bible for a few years. And our goal with Binge the Bible is, listen, we understand binging content in our culture. We're all over Netflix and all the other 70,000 streaming services, which, by the way, I just miss cable at this point. But we know what it means to just see this content in a quick format and absorb these stories. And we want you to be literate in the Bible. I want you to understand it, to know it, to understand the context, what was happening in the world when these books were written. And I want you to be able to open your Bible and with confidence study what God has placed there for you to see and understand. And that's what this series is about. So each week, we'll talk about a different book of the Bible or a couple books of the Bible, and we'll reveal the content, what happens in those books, what's the overarching story of what God is doing, where does it fit in the big story of God's picture. And it is a powerful, powerful series. If you haven't been here for a Binge the Bible season before, you can just jump right in. We're going to start in the book of Job, and then we're going into Jonah and Nahum, and we're getting into some minor prophets. It's going to be awesome, a ton of fun. But I would recommend you can find all of these on our website, gatherashville.org, and you can click on the media area there and go to series and Binge the Bible season 1, 2, 3, and 4. Catch up while you can, you know, get that recap. Get in there and try to remember what happened in the last season so that you're prepared for the next season. I'm excited about it. It's going to be a great fall at the Gathering Church. Today, let's wrap up our series called Storms. Talk a little bit about aftermath today. If you were living in Asheville last fall, I'll bet you'll never forget what you saw the day after the hurricane hit our region. I won't. I remember the initial shock of just walking around my own yard and seeing how different that was, realizing in that early moment how bad this storm really had been. I remember seeing the flooding on my own street. Trees blocking every path out of town. Our power lines all the way down the road that we live off of North Rugby Road, and the power lines were all tangled up in a heap. Every single one of them was down. I remember being overwhelmed by the amount of work that lied ahead of us. I remember the water rising. I remember when the water receded, the staggering sight of how the earth had changed because of the water moving through. I remember going to Biltmore Village. See, we were in the process of leasing a permanent home for our church. I remember going to that building for the first time a few days after the storm, seeing mud piled all up around the doors, a car upside down in the parking lot, semi-truck in the river right behind it. I remember going to Swannanoa in the days after the storm to help people get clean water and just seeing that the town was gone. I remember going to Barnardsville, seeing similar things. I remember Burnsville being just locked in and trapped by the devastation. I remember even how my own road was inaccessible for days. There's a lot to stomach the aftermath of a storm. It's a lot to process. I remember just an incredible feeling of overwhelm. How is this ever going to get cleaned up? How do we fix this? 2 days after the storm, I was talking to my wife, Raelle, and we had just seen Biltmore Village for the first time. And we're looking at it, and she said, how are we going to raise our kids here? How does any of this ever go back to how it was? Because in that moment, it felt like this city was never going to get put back together again. It felt like this devastation had to be permanent. How could things ever be okay again? And I wonder if you've ever felt that way before, if you've ever felt overwhelmed at the scope of recovery, if recovery ever felt impossible to you in the aftermath of not just that storm, maybe you felt that way last year, as recently as just like me, walking around after that storm and seeing what had happened to your neighborhood, your home, your town. Maybe you felt that way in other storms in your life. Maybe you've lived through these seasons of turmoil and you made it through the chaos only to realize just how devastated everything was on the other side. You survived just barely only to realize the amount of work that lied ahead of you. Maybe you're a couple months into a divorce and you're looking at the devastation, wondering if you'll ever be okay again, if your kids will ever be okay again. Maybe you're looking at the empty chair after the loss of somebody you love, and you're wondering, will I ever feel whole again? Maybe you've been going to doctor after doctor after that diagnosis, and you're just wondering if you'll ever have peace again. Or you made it through the treatment. You've gone through the worst of it, and you're on the other side realizing just how much that time took from you. Maybe you just keep looking at the devastation, and you're really not even sure how to get started cleaning this up. What am I supposed to believe? How am I supposed to feel? What do I manage? What does tomorrow look like in the aftermath of a storm? How do we get through it without crumbling day in and day out? I want to talk this morning. I want to give you three things that you can do right when the storm is over. If you're looking back on a storm, living in the aftermath right now, or maybe you've been blessed enough that you haven't gone through this kind of storm yet. But Jesus said, in this world, you will have trouble. And so I hope that these things can help you as you process what to do the day after. The first thing is this: worship where you are, even if it's not where you want to be. Throughout this series, you might have noticed a pattern. Every week, we give you pretty much the same course of action in every area of the storm. That's on purpose. We aren't trying to trick you or cut corners by giving the same 3 points as many times as we can. I genuinely believe that in every phase of the storm, these are the most important things that I can do. That when I'm preparing for a storm, because I can see one on the way, I've got to get my foundation set in Jesus Christ. When I'm in the chaos of the storm and I don't know what's going to happen to me, the only anchor that I have is my faith. And on the other side of that storm, when it feels like hope is destroyed, the only hope that I have is in Jesus. There's this story in the Old Testament that I go to often because it's such a fundamental moment in history. It's so important to our own lives and to the story of Jesus, the story of humanity, how Jesus came and the process that got us there and all these things. And it's this moment that happens around 586 BC. And it's the fall of Jerusalem. And so if you need a little history brush up on your Old Testament history, the people of God were meant to be set apart for God. He established this people that he said, I want you to set yourselves apart from the world, to just only worship me and to live the way that I'm going to tell you to live, and you'll have a more full life because of it. And he called this people his people, and he put them in a city called Jerusalem, and in that city was the temple, and in the temple was the Ark of the Covenant. And on the Ark of the Covenant, there's this space right in the middle called the mercy seat, and that is where the presence of God physically dwelt. You see, Jerusalem, as it was a preview of what heaven would be. God's people living together in his presence. But the people of God rebelled because they had hearts of sin. And they worshiped other gods and they worshiped themselves and they didn't live the way he called them to live. And he gave warning after warning. And then finally, he decided another way. He began to set the wheels into motion to bring Jesus in order to give us an opportunity at true redemption and to be brought into his family once and for all. But this war that led them to the destruction of Jerusalem was brutal and devastating for everyone who lived there. The greatest conquering nation history had ever seen at that moment, Babylon, came knocking at the door. See, King Nebuchadnezzar of Babylon had a dream, a vision of one world where everybody was a part of one big culture. He wanted to conquer the world and enfold all of the cultures of the world into the culture of Babylon. So he came to Jerusalem first and gave them an opportunity to just be a part of Babylon, but they rebelled. And as a result of that, King Nebuchadnezzar brought in his troops and they destroyed the walls first of the city. And then they destroyed a third of all the buildings and the homes in the city. And then they destroyed the temple. And after they destroyed the temple, they took the Ark of the Covenant and it was never seen or heard from again. Unless Indiana Jones found it in the 1930s. We don't know for sure. For the people, this meant that their entire world identity, that their connection with God, that everything that made them who they were was destroyed right in front of them. They lived in years of chaos during this siege and this war that happened. And at the end of it, it felt like there was nothing left. 10,000 of the nobility of Judah were taken back to Babylon to be folded into that culture. Their royalty, all the people who would have been in leadership over them were taken away back to Babylon, which was a months-long walk in order to be folded into that culture. Everyone else was kicked out of the city into the surrounding areas, and it was broken and abandoned. And there's a man in that time named Jeremiah. And Jeremiah was a prophet. And Jeremiah, God gave him the wonderful job of telling everyone just before this war began that doom is coming and there's nothing you can do about it. People didn't like Jeremiah very much. And when the war happened, he was there. And when 10,000 people were marched out of Jerusalem, Jeremiah remained. And he wrote this book called Lamentations from a hill just outside of the city, looking down on the smoke and the ashes and the ember and the flame of devastation below him. He had survived the chaos by some miracle, but he had no idea what was going to come next. He wrote this in Jeremiah, or in Lamentations chapter 3. He's made my teeth grind on gravel and made me cower in ashes. My soul is bereft of peace. I've forgotten what happiness is. So I say, my endurance has perished, and so is my hope from the Lord. How do you hope in the aftermath? Because hope is what makes us survive. Hope is how we get through it. Hope is how we rebuild. But what do you do when you're looking at the devastation of a storm and all you can think is, I don't even have any hope anymore? We can't rebuild that. There's nothing left to rebuild. I remember my affliction and my wanderings, the wormwood and the gall. My soul continually remembers it. It's bowed down within me. But this I call to mind, and therefore I have hope. The steadfast love of the Lord never ceases. His mercies never come to an end. They're new every morning. Can you imagine staring at the devastation of your life and saying, but I believe that God's mercy is new every morning. It may be extinguished today, but it will be new again tomorrow. The Lord is my portion, says my soul, and therefore I will hope in him. When you've got no hope left, you can place your hope in Jesus. And this is why we build our foundation on faith. And in the moment of the aftermath, the first time you walk outside after the storm, when the dust settles and you realize all that lies ahead, it is okay to write your lamentation, to be angry, to look around and say, how does this ever seem okay again? How am I ever okay again? What am I supposed to do? How do I survive this? And yet, my hope is in the Lord. There's another man whose story is recorded during this time. His name is Daniel. We're going to do a whole series on Daniel in January or February next year. It's coming, and I can't wait to tell you all about his life and how it relates to us today. But Daniel was about 15 to 18 when this war happened. He's a teenager. And Daniel's a part of the nobility of Jerusalem. He's being groomed. He's from the tribe of Judah, which is the tribe of kings. He is being groomed to be a leader of the people. His whole life, that's what he's told he's going to be one day. You're going to be a leader. And imagine your whole life is taking you in one direction, and in one, seemingly one moment, it's over. 2 years they're at war, and then he's being marched across the desert to a foreign land. What happens to my life now? How do I go on? How do I carry on? Where do I find my hope? And Daniel teaches us that even when we're not where we want to be, we can still worship in the place that we are. Daniel gets to Babylon. They change his name, his clothes. They cut his hair, shave his face. They make him look like a different man. They give him a Babylonian name. Belteshazzar is what they call him. And all of his friends are renamed, and he's here, and they're giving him an opportunity to sit at the king's table. They want him to be in leadership for Babylon now, but here at the king's table is food that has been sacrificed to pagan gods, which means to eat it would be sin for Daniel because he still worships the one true God. He could have done a lot of things. Given up hope, settled in, just folded himself into Babylon, which thousands of others were doing, and who could blame them? Daniel decided he would worship God where he was. In Daniel 1:8, it says, but Daniel resolved that he would not defile himself with the king's food or with the wine that he drank, and therefore he asked the chief of the eunuchs to allow him not to defile himself. Daniel's world was unrecognizable. It was unfathomable. But instead of just trying to keep himself alive, he resolved himself to honor God even in his most broken circumstances. God is still God, even in the aftermath of your chaos. Daniel didn't have control over a whole lot. He didn't really know what to do or where to begin. The road ahead of him was long, so he decided that despite all of that, God is still God. So he made his decision in that aftermath that he was going to worship God no matter what happened to him. No matter what the days ahead had in store, no matter how his life and purpose had changed, he would do this one thing. He would worship God right where he was, even though it was not where he wanted to be. I don't know what kind of storm you've lived through, or that you're going through, or that you just went through. But I've been through my own storms. I know how disorienting the aftermath is. The best way for you to orient yourself in the aftermath of a storm is by making that same decision. Regardless of where I am today, what happens with this wreckage of my life, I'm going to honor God. I'm going to worship him. I'm going to give this minute to him, and then the minute that comes after that. David wrote in Psalm 34:1, I will bless the Lord at all times, and his praise will continually be in my mouth. And where he was when he wrote that psalm matters. It tells us that he wrote this psalm while he was exiled from Israel, being hunted by the king that he loved and served. His whole life that he thought was ahead of him to be a general in Saul's army and one day become the king of Israel, he thought this was over. He was now in the land of his enemies, pretending to be insane so that they wouldn't kill him. And that's where he is when he writes, I will bless the Lord at all times, and his praise will continually be in my mouth. I know how hard it is when things aren't where you want them to be. But you have survived the chaos. And that is something. And I know the road is daunting and overwhelming, but you have survived the chaos. Take a moment to worship. It says in Nahum 1:7, the Lord is good, a stronghold in the day of trouble. And he knows those who take refuge in him. Whatever you're going through, when you stand in the aftermath, choose to honor God wherever you are, no matter what lies ahead. Second thing is this, you have to rebuild one step at a time. This is the most practical advice that I can give you when you're standing in the aftermath of a storm. When you're looking at devastation, it can be overwhelming. What do I do? How do I help? How do I restart my life? How do I get from here to happy again, whole again, settled again? How do I find peace again? And you do it the same way that you clean up your yard after a storm. One branch at a time. We had 12 trees come down in our yard after the storm. Our trampoline in our playhouse, all the kids' stuff was destroyed. There was a giant cherry tree laying across all of it. Our fence was under a tree. It was overwhelming. For weeks, I was just grateful that our home was okay. I had seen so much devastation that we were alive and our home was okay. So how could we complain about any of this? And we didn't. And we just went out and served and didn't do much in our own home. But 6 weeks after the storm, we still had trees down all over our yard. And we said, you know what? I think it's time for us to clean this up. How do we do that? We just started picking up branches one at a time. Eventually, we got to the tree. Eventually, we got to the wreckage. Eventually, we got to the stump. But we couldn't begin by ripping the stumps out of the ground. We had to start just by clearing the branches. If you're in the aftermath and you're ready to start the recovery process, ask what you can do right now, where you are today, one step, one thing right in front of you, and just get started. Daniel in this story is in Babylon. I can't imagine how overwhelming this is for a young teenage man whose whole life is now not what he thought it would be. He's in the aftermath of the biggest storm he ever thought he could ever live through. And what is he supposed to do about it? How is he supposed to serve God under this foreign king? He's in unfamiliar territory. He must have felt overwhelmed. How do you start rebuilding your life when you've never been where you are before? Daniel couldn't rebuild Jerusalem. He couldn't undo what had happened. So he just did what he could where he was. In his life, we see incredible things that God would do in and through Daniel. God would choose to use Daniel to reveal the coming of Christ to his people. But he just began with what he ate. It was a very simple and small beginning. But Daniel said, how do I worship God and live in my purpose in this foreign place and in the aftermath of this storm? Well, I guess I could start by not eating this food that I'm not supposed to eat. Daniel 1:8, he says, I will not defile myself. He just took one faithful step. He began with what he could see one step at a time. I know the devastation is overwhelming when you think about what you've lost, when you think about where you wanted to go, when you can't really see where you're going. It's just overwhelming to try and take it all in. But we can learn from this moment in Daniel's life when he just said, what can I do? And do this one thing at a time. He began with his food. Jesus told us as he confronts this epidemic of worry that humanity suffers from in Matthew chapter 6:34, he says, do not worry about tomorrow. Tomorrow's got enough troubles of its own. Do not worry about tomorrow. Let tomorrow worry about itself. Each day has enough troubles of its own. When we look at the destruction, it's easy to get overwhelmed by the future. And there will come a moment in the aftermath when you do have to figure out the future. But before you get there, just get started by doing what you can where you are. That is what Daniel does in this moment. I remember after Helene, when the building that we had hoped to move our church into was destroyed, trying to figure out what to do next. I wasn't sure if it could be rebuilt or not. We just knew it was a long road ahead. We thought that we were going to be in a new building by Easter. And here we were in October thinking, no way. We hope we get to go back to TC. I remember standing there in the mud, just looking at it. We could have been paralyzed in that moment. Angry, upset. We could have thrown in the towel. It had been a hard season of ministry already. We could have said, well, we tried. But instead, when we couldn't rebuild that building, we decided to start rebuilding others. Many of you, in that moment after the storm, when you felt helpless by the devastation, just picked up a chainsaw and started clearing what you could. We wanted that building so that we could use it to spread the gospel. But if the building wasn't going to happen, we knew that we could still go and spread the gospel. I love the story of Paul when he's in prison. Paul was preparing to go on a fourth missionary journey to keep planting churches and spreading the gospel across the world. Before he went on that journey, he felt called to go to Jerusalem. He wanted to check on the believers there. He wanted to bring some offerings that he had collected to the people who were struggling there and see if everybody was okay. And within a week of arriving in Jerusalem, he was arrested, thrown in prison for years, which would culminate in him going to Rome before an emperor that hated Christians. He must have, at some point, been overwhelmed by that, seeing all the dreams that he had brought into question by this moment. While he was in prison, he wrote Ephesians, Philippians, Colossians, and Philemon, some of the most powerful epistles that he wrote, because he just did what he could where he was. And in each of those epistles, we learn that even though he couldn't go the way that he wanted and fulfill his dreams the way that he wanted and do what he had planned, he made a decision to figure out how he was going to live out his calling precisely where he was. That's why in Philippians 1, he tells us that he has brought the gospel to the entire Roman guard, that these guys who are required to be near him are going to hear the gospel above all else. We have multiple stories in these epistles of entire families of Romans being saved because Paul decided he was going to do what he could where he was. He had a captive audience, and he began to share the gospel with them. Wherever you are, just take a step. Just begin. Do whatever you can with where you are. You may not be ready to move that tree off the house yet. You may not be able to on your own, but you can start picking up branches. The third thing is this. This too shall pass. Hope is hard in the aftermath. Jeremiah, I imagine him writing these lamentations, staring at the devastation of the city that he loved, the temple that he loved. And I love that in this place in Lamentations chapter 3, we see within a couple of verses where he says, I've got no hope. And then he says, but my hope is in the Lord. There's this reality that we have to come to in the aftermath of a storm that you may not be able to have any hope on your own that it's going to be okay. But you can hope in God. This too shall pass. Today it doesn't look all that different. I remember after the storm, my wife and I looked out at the devastation and wondered if we were going to be able to raise our kids in this mess. How are we going to survive here? How is it ever going to be okay again? And for our home and our neighborhood, our area, today it doesn't look all that different than it did before the storm hit. Things have gone mostly back to normal for us. We couldn't imagine it then, but it's our reality today. It's not everybody's reality. We're unbelievably grateful. We know that there are many whose lives are forever changed by what happened in that storm. But this is our story. Sometimes it feels like darkness is never going to end. But this too shall pass, as all things do in time. Seasons change. Tides rise and fall. Daniel had no reason to expect anything good to come out of this time that he was in Babylon. But Babylon is exactly where God promoted him, called him, used him. It says in Daniel 1:9 that God gave Daniel favor in Babylon. As he made his choice to control the only thing he could at the time, his food intake, God gave him favor and began to unfold purpose inside of him. Eventually, Daniel and his friends who made this same decision were noticed by not just the man in charge of them, but the king himself. So they were being studied because of their diet, if they were going to survive or get weak. And they kept getting stronger. And it said in every matter of wisdom and understanding, the king found them 10 times better than everyone else. So they were promoted. And Daniel became this crucial advisor to the king, which positioned him in these instrumental ways throughout the plan of God. In the second half of the book of Daniel is prophecies that God gives to Daniel about how one day God is going to make everything new and restore the world to a better place, and how one is coming that would make all of that possible. Daniel, in Babylon, with his whole world torn apart, became one of the most important prophets of the Old Testament. It says in Daniel 1:20 that in every matter of wisdom and understanding, the king found him 10 times better than everybody around them. If God can turn an exile into an ambassador, he can turn captivity into calling. He could turn your aftermath into an assignment. David wrote, "Weeping may endure for a night, but joy comes in the morning. All things pass, and God is still good." In Joel chapter 2, it says, "I will restore to you the years the locusts have eaten." I just think this is one of the most powerful lines of prophecy in the Bible. I think about it all the time. Because what does chaos and aftermath and the storms of this life take from us, among all other things? Time. And we can go crazy mourning the time that we've lost. What's happened in that time? "I will restore to you the years the locusts have eaten." You may be standing in your aftermath, but I believe God may be positioning you for your assignments. You may not be able to see it or imagine it, but God has something in store for you. We talked in the first week of this series about how God uses these bad things for good in different ways. I don't think that these storms are good, but I do believe that God is always working out a greater purpose through them. You may always have the scars of the storms you have survived, but that does not mean that God is not working incredible purpose out for you on the other side of it. As we worked through this series, I thought about the many storms that I've lived through. I've been processing it just like you. Whenever I'm preparing for a series, I'm usually just the first person that it gets preached to. And I'm thinking through all these storms, and one of the biggest for me and that we all lived through was COVID. I know we don't like to talk about COVID. We prefer to pretend this moment never happened. But for me as a pastor, it was unlike anything I thought I'd ever see. And the 3 years that followed March of 2020, they were one battle after another for me. I had this dream, this vision, this clarity about where I believed God was taking our church before that March. You may not know this, but we were in the process of getting plans drawn up and signing a lease for a permanent facility the very weekend that we paused everything for COVID. We lost that building because of that storm. I just remember in the aftermath of that storm wondering if we'd ever see any of these dreams come true. In the years that followed, as we dealt with aftershock after aftershock, I wanted to quit. Nothing made any sense. Nothing was like I thought it would be. There were days where all I could do was just move one step at a time. Where all I could do was say, if God has created me to spread the gospel, how can I spread the gospel today? Because I don't know about tomorrow. There were days where I felt like each passing year was just getting worse. But here we are, 5 years later. Who I am is not who I was then. The world has changed. This church has changed. But that season is behind us, and a new and exciting season lies ahead of us. I could spend weeks unfolding for you all the ways that the years after COVID have made us into the church God needed us to be for this city. That he's made me into the person he needed me to be for my family, for our church, for this city. I could just spend all my time telling you about the many ways that I believe God has prepared us for the future as a result of that storm, that he's called us and developed our calling even while we were in exile. Nobody wants to go through a storm. But God will restore what the locusts have eaten. He has something even better in mind for you, for our city, for the purpose that you thought was over for you. God has a better purpose in store. He will transform you through this horrible work. And on the other side, he will call you into something that you were born to do. It's hard to see it in the aftermath, but this too shall pass. And a new season, maybe even a better one, is on the way. If you're in here today and you've been going through storms without any hope to anchor to throughout your life, and you're desperate for something to change, I want to invite you today into a relationship with Jesus. Jesus told us a story about two men, one who built his house on sinking sand. He had no foundation. And when the wind came and the storms blew, the house broke apart and fell into the sea, for there was nothing that it would hold it up. But the second man built his house on solid rock. He had a foundation. And when the winds blew and the storm came, the house remained solid because of the foundation it was on. Jesus Christ and the gospel he proclaims is that foundation. You can build your life on that foundation today. Every head bowed, every eye closed. If you're ready, just pray this prayer with me. Heavenly Father, forgive me for my sins. Forgive me for trying to do this on my own. I need you. I believe in you. I believe in your resurrection. I believe in who you are. And so all that I am from this day on, I am yours. I give myself to you. In Jesus' name, amen.